afternoon with highs in the lower 80s in the south, upper 70s in the north. This is NHPR.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The Asian clam is yet another emerging threat to New Hampshire's waterways. A small but powerful invasive species, the clam was first seen in the Midwest and West around 1930. They're roughly the size of a quarter or smaller, but their ability to spread is impressive, producing anywhere from 2,000 to 8,000 offspring a year, thereby allowing them to disrupt or even take over their new surroundings. They're not picky either about where they make their new home, ponds, lakes, rivers, streams. They even enter water treatment system pipes, causing billions of dollars of damage nationwide. Asian clams were first seen in New Hampshire just a few years ago in the Merrimack River and in a pond in Windham, but officials think there are probably a lot more out there, adding to the list of invasive creatures they're trying to eradicate. And that list may be growing. The dreaded emerald ash borer was discovered this year in Concord, for example, and a tiny insect called the red pine scale found in Bear Brook State Park last year led to the cutting of more than 100 acres of pine trees. But state environmental officials aren't just letting the invasives take over. There are extensive, multiple efforts ongoing aimed at combating their spread. Today in The Exchange, part two of our series on invasive species. We're focusing on non-native animals. We talked about invasive plants yesterday. Let's hear from you. What invasive insects or mollusks or other creatures have appeared in your community? What's been their impact? And what's being done to prevent them from taking over? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can also post a comment on our Facebook page. With me in studio, Amy Smagula, limnologist, exotic species program coordinator with the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services. And Amy, thank you for giving us your time both today and yesterday. Good to see you.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Jeff Schloss, extension professor in biological sciences and natural resources program team leader at UNH. And Jeff, good to meet you. Thank you.
Good morning, Laura.
And also with us, Pira Seigert. She's New Hampshire's state entomologist under the Department of Agriculture. And Pira, it's good to meet you too. Thank you for your time as well.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, and Pira, I want to start with you. We talked with our guest yesterday about plants, and I want your answer on this same question, but obviously in terms of your expertise, which is land animals. How is it going, this battle against invasive species?
Well, most of what I work with is insects, and I guess it depends on whether you're a glass half full or a glass half empty person. We do have a lot of invasive insects, some of which are quite destructive, that have entered the state or were looking for entering the state, and that would be the drawback. But we also have a lot of good outreach and a lot of public education about the dangers that are associated with these invasive insects. We have a lot of people from across the state call in or send us photos through either email or through www.nhbugs.org, which has a photo upload site of different insects that they haven't seen before that they're curious about. So we have a lot of outreach and a lot of people looking for these insects. And that's important because early detection is really key to lowering costs associated with invasive insects and also to be able to manage them.
Yeah, and the level of volunteer support, volunteer activity, as we heard yesterday, is really impressive. So that's the glass half full. What's the glass half empty?
The glass half empty really is that we do have a lot of insects that are coming in due to trade and to movement of products that can harbor these insects.
What kind of trade? Like wood coming in for campfires?
Campfire wood is a big one for bringing in things like emerald ash borer. It's probably the number one way that emerald ash borer is moved long distances. Log products that have the bark still on, materials, wood packing materials that are coming in from Asia.
Imported fruit, imported vegetables, do those sometimes harbor invasive insects?
They can.
All right. Well, and Jeff, I want to turn to you too. And as I understand, you work more on the water end of things. What's your sense of mollusks and other water creatures and how well we're doing at keeping these invasives under control?
Well, the spread of these species tend to be a little bit slower than the aquatic plants that you talked about yesterday. Interestingly, we're probably worst hit right now in terms of our marine invaders. We have a lot of different types of crabs that have invaded the area.
Saltwater.
And our estuaries. We've had the European green crab for a while, and it's had its impact on the coast. We have Asian shore crab that we're looking out for, and it's moving up. We just started a program and a number of programs, even using citizen volunteers and commercial fishermen out to keep an eye on Chinese minton crab. And then on the freshwater aspect, as you mentioned, the Asian clam is a new introduction and one of the real problematic types of mollusk species that we're really concerned about.
So just overall, you know, if I were talking to you at a party and I said, hey, Jeff, how's it going? I mean, how optimistic are you feeling? How glass half full, glass half empty is Piracet are you feeling?
Well, in some of the cases, we have very pure water conditions and very soft waters, which help us for some of the invasions, for especially the shellfish. But we are seeing slowly migrations of species that once invaded the Great Lakes and are essentially moving out to both areas of the country, the east and west coast, and we're really going to be expecting a lot of different species that will come our way that might have some great impacts into our waters if we're not really vigilant.
So it sounds like you're feeling a little nervous.
A little nervous just to see as these ranges are spreading.
Yeah, and I know, Amy, you look at this a lot, too. When we talked about how we're doing against invasive plants yesterday, what about that, Amy, the idea that some of these water creatures are, if they're not here yet, they're on their way?
They are on their way. And yesterday when we were talking about plants are a little bit easier to see. They're these big green garland-like things that are hanging off boat trailers, which are sort of visible. But these invasive insects and animals are things that I'm calling the no-see-ums, where they may come in larval form and you have no idea that they're there. They could be in a bait bucket. They could be attached microscopically to the outside of a boat or a trailer, and you don't know that they're there until they start growing in a water body, and there they are.
Wow, the no-see-ums. Like
the Asian clam or the zebra mussel or the spiny water flea. A lot of them are very, very small when they're in their larval phases, and they're still sort of small when you see them in a water body. You already mentioned the Asian clam is about a quarter size or smaller. The zebra mussel is about the size of a pistachio nut or smaller.
Oh, wow, that is small.
So they're definitely smaller than the native mussels, which are a few inches long that we see in our lakes and ponds. So it might take a while to notice them. And once that happens, you could realize that they're everywhere, all over the bottom of your lake or your river.
Wow, and to the untrained eye, you know, if you're just casually boating or swimming or whatever, you don't notice the difference.
You generally don't notice the difference. And some of the things, like the Asian clam, which I've been working a lot with this summer, can burrow down as much as 6 inches into the lake sediment and then come back up. So they may be hidden for a while and then they might migrate up to the surface to feed and you start noticing them in large numbers.
And I want to ask about their impact, all of you, both on farms and forests and obviously the waterways. But a quick question for you, Pira. You know, doing the research yesterday, the word Asia kept coming up. Asian clam, Chinese this, Japanese that. Why are so many of these invasives coming from Asia?
That's a really great question, and it's one that I actually love to answer, especially about the insects. And the reason has to do a lot with trade. And we have a very recent trade history with Asia. It's only about since the 1970s that we've been doing significant trade, especially with China. We have a 400-year trade history with Europe. So our early invasive insects, of which there were many, and many of our important agricultural pests were European-introduced invasive insects, have already come over here. And so we may have gotten most of those insects that actually were going to invade the U.S., whereas right now we have so much directionality and trade from China, so much material that's coming over, and all of that material has a possibility, if not a probability, of harboring an insect. Also, there's some evidence that at least for Europe and quite possibly for Asia, that they just have, over evolutionary history, made very competitive insects and other animals that can outcompete our locals.
So that's why everything seems to be Asian or Japanese or Chinese and so forth. Did you want to jump in on that too, Jeff?
Well, in the case of the aquatics, one of the major vectors of spreading new infestations is from ship ballast water. And the real reasoning there, again, as Paris talked about, is trade. Typically, there is less to export from the originating Asian or Eurasian area. So they have to make up that difference in weight by taking on water, typically in the estuary area or in the freshwaters where they might have their ports.
This is where, before the boat leaves, it has to balance itself out.
Okay. So as it goes through the oceans, it's set for storms in terms of having a low center of gravity. When it gets to the U.S., typically the Great Lakes area where many of these infestations have started, then they take on more cargo to take back to on their return trip. And in that case, they release that ballast water because they now have the weight of the cargo
from Asia
to make up from that. And until recently, when there are regulations that have been trying to require these ships to dump that water out at sea, refill, and then come in and then do the same thing when they get out of port here, they've spread a tremendous amount because there are millions of gallons of ballast water that then has been exchanged. And as Amy said, a lot of these are coming in as small larvae forms that are maybe millimeters in size or even smaller. And so it's very easy for it for those types of species to slip through, especially those larval species, to slip through the screens that would be in the ballast water pipes.
Wow, that's an amazing story, Amy.
And another really interesting pathway is that some of these species are actually food for different cultures. The snakehead fish and the Chinese mystery snail are actually very popular in the Asian food market. So they were purposely brought in for purposes of using them for food, and then they were either accidentally or purposely introduced into a water body.
Wow. Well, and one more question for you, Jeff. Following up on something Pira said when I asked her about why Asia, and she said part of the reason is we have a 400 to 500 year trading history with Europe, but just a couple decades with Asia, and that a lot of the species that were considered invasive from Europe, you know, we've sort of integrated them, if I could put it that way. Is that a note of hope, Jeff, that eventually these sort of exotic Asian species will become part of the landscape here and it'll be okay?
Well, I think there are many species that we do inherit from other areas, and there have been many species where even early in our histories we've actually introduced from Europe in terms of our fish. Remember, only the brook trout is native compared to all the other recreational species that we take advantage of here in New Hampshire. All the other ones have been introduced.
Wait, hang on. Only the brook trout is native to New Hampshire.
In terms
everything
of the
else
recreational
catches
species that we typically
wow
look at. And in a lot of cases, they've essentially filled areas where they weren't competing against another type of fish, and they've done very well, and they've become very, very very useful for recreation and for the lake ecology and things like that. On the other hand, it's only at the small occasion when we get a weed-type species or an invasive-type species which has such a direct impact. In the case of the Asian clam or even the zebra mussel, which is even worse, these are species that have the capability to get into water systems like drinking water systems or other types of systems like fire control systems. So you're really in trouble if you get that infestation. Back in Europe where they have them, or in Eurasia where they have them, they've essentially built dual systems so they can shut down a system and clean it out. We don't have that capability in the older systems that we have because we never had these species before.
All right. Well, a lot more to follow up on after a short break. We're going to check in now, though, with our summer car raffle.
You count on NHPR for getting expertise and perspective and hearing discussions on issues that affect your life. That's what the Exchange does so well. Good morning. I'm Virginia Prescott. I'm here with Michael Brinley. He's our newscast producer and reporter. And we're here to tell you about some of the things that are at stake here with the summer car raffle from NHPR. You can buy your tickets at 1-888-805-6477, or you can buy your tickets online at nhpr.org.
The clock is winding down. You are running out of time to join NHPR's summer car raffle. We're giving away a Trek bike with Yakima roof rack donated by SNW Sports, a kayak from Portsmouth Kayak Adventures, and the grand prize, a new car from any of Groponi Automotive Group's 6 dealerships. That's a prize we could all use. And all these prizes are up for grabs. All you have to do is buy your ticket. The deadline, Saturday at noon. Call 1-888-805-6477, or you can go online, get your tickets there. It's very easy at nhpr.org.
Right, you don't want to miss out. There are so many different sources of information out there on television, the internet, radio. Now, how many of them, ask yourself, can you really trust? You do, or you must trust the hosts and reporters you hear on NHPR and NPR, or you wouldn't be listening. Pay for your listening now by picking up your NHPR car raffle tickets as you listen to The Exchange. 1-888-805-6477. It's $50 for one ticket, three for 100. NHPR.org. You can also buy them there.
We're all looking for that good deal. How about this? $50 for one ticket, $100 for three tickets. That is a great deal. All you have to do is call 1-888-805-6477. The question you got to ask yourself is, how many chances do you want? What works for you? Go online at nhpr.org and buy your tickets there. It's very easy. You can sign up for the raffle and get in today.
There's never a shortage of news. Your ongoing financial support makes it possible for NHPR and NPR to be flexible, to cover the stories the way that you expect and the way that you depend upon them. We fly reporters all over the world and all over the state. We just drive all over the state, actually. And we cover the issues and events that are popping up that affect your lives. That's what we do here at New Hampshire Public Radio, and that's what your support enables. You can support NHPR today by buying raffle tickets toward this grand prize of a new car, a Trek bike, or a kayak. It's $50 for one ticket, $100 for three tickets. Take as many chances as you'd like and call us at 1-888-805-6477.
You really only have a couple days left, and you know once that Friday afternoon rolls around, you're going to say to yourself, why didn't I sign up? So get it over with now. Get in the raffle. All you have to do is call 1-888-805-6477. Don't put off getting those tickets until later. It ends on Saturday, and it really does just take 2 minutes of your time. Please take those 2 minutes now. Get your tickets. Go online right there at nhpr.org and get your tickets now.
The grand prize for the summer raffle, a car. The winner gets to choose a new car from any of Grapponi's six dealerships. So just ask yourself, which one would you choose? Of course, when you choose to get your $50 raffle ticket today, you will also be eligible to win a kayak or a bike and a roof rack. These are three prizes on the table when you get your raffle tickets. Take a look at our complete raffle rules at nhpr.org and don't let them get taken off the table without you having a chance. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Today's news is just too complex for sound bites. That's why you listen to NHPR. But in-depth reporting, it's expensive, which is why fewer news outlets do it. Preserve your source for in-depth news now by buying your car raffle ticket. Again, it's one for $50 or three for $100. That's a great bargain. All you have to do is go online. You can get your tickets there at nhpr.org, or why not give us a call at 1-888-805-6477.
Somebody's going to win. Why not let it be you? You can buy three tickets for $100, one ticket for $50. Buy as many as you would like chances to win a grand prize of a new car, or the second prize, a Trek bike, or a third prize, a kayak. And of course, the ongoing prize that you're supporting New Hampshire Public Radio, the service that you listen to and depend upon day in and day out. $50 for one ticket, 1-888-805-6477, or such a deal, three tickets for $100 at nhpr.org. 1-888-805-6477. Why not take a chance?
More of The Exchange coming up on NHPR. New Hampshire weather clouding up with a slight chance of showers and isolated thunderstorm this afternoon. High temperatures upper 70s, cloudy, showers tonight. Some areas of fog forming after midnight, lows from upper 50s to lower 60s. Mostly cloudy, chance of showers tomorrow morning, then turning partly sunny in the afternoon with a chance of showers. Highs tomorrow upper 70s to lower 80s. It'll be partly sunny statewide Saturday. There is a slight chance of showers north of the mountains. Highs Saturday upper 70s to lower 80s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Concord Regional Visiting Nurse Association, providing home care nursing in the community for people of all ages to help them remain independent in their own homes, crvna.org. And New Hampshire's community colleges now accepting registrations for the fall semester. Information and links at ccsnh.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're looking at the threat of invasive animals, meaning insects, mollusks, and other creatures, being found in New Hampshire's waterways, forests, and farms. It's part of a two-day look at invasive species that we're doing here on The Exchange. Yesterday, we looked at plants. We invite you to join us now with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. What invasive insects and other creatures have appeared in your community? What's been their impact, as far as you can see, and what's being done to prevent them from taking over? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And all of you, before we go to our listeners, we were talking just before the break about the way we used to do things, especially in terms of trade, that just brought in invasive species. Jeff, you told an amazing story about ships from Asia bringing extra water into the Great Lakes and then just dumping it once they didn't need it anymore, and all sorts of creatures getting out. What would you say, Pierre, I'll turn to you first. What would you say we're doing differently now in terms of the rules and regulations aimed at preventing the spread of these invasives?
Right. So a lot of it is just recognizing what kind of material is actually capable of bringing these insects in. And there are now international rules that most of the countries have signed on to in terms of that wood packing material that's used to hold the cargo in place when material is being brought over in container ships. And that the agreement is now that the countries, when they are sending this wood packing material over, are heat treating it in order to kill all life stages of the insects that might possibly be within that material. Those rules did go into place after some of our detections of Asian longhorn beetle and emerald ash borer. So at least those two insects precede. The introduction of those two insects precede these international rules. Also, many states now have exterior firewood quarantines because firewood is being recognized as a major vector for moving these invasive pests long distance. It's firewood is moved by a very broad population, anywhere from the large commercial producers to the backyard camper. So there's a lot of movement on firewood, and there are a lot of states with firewood regulations as well.
Although as someone who camps, I've seen those, you know, please don't bring in firewood from these states. But, you know, people do it anyway. I mean, nobody is really saying at the campground office, okay, where's that wood from? And
well, it is the public's resource. The forests really are the public's resource, and it's in the public's best interest to preserve their resource. The forest rangers are doing some compliance checks now, and so the different states are handling it differently.
What else would you say real quick, Jeff, that we're doing differently now? We've got a little bit smarter about this.
Well, I think we've focused on some of the other vectors, and we've done a lot of outreach providing
information. Vectors, again, means the way that they travel.
Things are moved and travel. Yeah. We've been working more closely with the aquarium industry, where a lot of introductions have occurred with snails and things like such. We've also been working with the general public, with the anglers out there, to make sure that they're not taking fish or bait that they got from one lake and moved to the other. Because not only could you have the possibility of moving that fish, but any larval forms of some of these invasive species can be moved the same way. Because here you have a nice bucket of water that you're moving from one lake to the other.
And when you say you're working with the aquarium industry, are you saying that people might have in the past used Chinese mystery snail or Asian clams or whatever in their aquariums, and then how do those get into the natural environment? Do people dump them in their pond down the street?
People put aquarium animals in their outdoor ponds in terms of their landscaping. People do dump out things thinking, I don't want to kill my fish. I want them to live. We do have some goldfish in some of the waters. New Hampshire is listed as invasive species that we find in some of our lakes, probably coming from that fact that people do dump out their aquariums.
Yeah, there's some pretty scary-looking giant goldfish in the park near my house, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Amy, do you want to jump in there, just how we've gotten a little bit smarter, rules, regulations, practices?
Sure. With the shipping industry and just regular recreational boating, we've gotten a lot smarter. The ballast water introductions that Jeff mentioned, the ballast water regulations that are in place now really require a lot of when do you take up water, when do you dump water, and actually in the hull treatment of the water that is used as ballast so that you are killing the organisms in transit and not dumping live organisms into an area. And there's heat treatment and there are other types of things that they use. For the regular everyday recreational boater in New Hampshire, we are marketing the clean, drain, dry message, where we're asking you to clean your boats, either power wash them or just hose them off really well. Drain your bait buckets, your live wells, anything that contains water that may have been contaminated, and dry your gear if you can. Ideally, 7 days is best, but we recognize the boater is not going to stop to dry their boat for 7 days before they use it again. Unfortunately, though, the zebra mussel can close up its shell and survive for 7 to 10 days outside of the water. So there are some things that are a little more ominous and long-lived. But the message is there so that we can try to educate the boaters as well.
Let's get our listeners involved. Again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Today in the Exchange, invasive animals in the Granite State. It's the second of a two-day series on invasive species. We're looking at the insects, mollusks, and other creatures that are causing trouble here in our forests, our waterways, and our farms. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Diane is up first from Guilford. Hi, Diane. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Oh, good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call. I guess my question is for Pira. In Guilford yesterday, I was blueberry picking up in the Belknaps, and I encountered a lot of ants that were fairly aggressive and got stung by one. So I started looking up information about fire ants. I'm just wondering, are those ants possibly native or are they invasive fire ants?
So that's a really great question. I get a lot of phone calls from people who describe insects on the phone to me, and it's very difficult because there are actually a lot more insects out there than most people assume. They're the most numerous type of animal on the planet, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of different species of ants in New Hampshire.
Just of ants.
Ants are actually quite numerous. The most numerous insect order actually is the beetle, but there are a lot of different kinds of ants. I'll always take photos or if you have a specimen, I'll look at it and see what it is. If you have gotten close to a nest, ants have a social system, so they'll have soldiers, and you might have some soldiers that are defending a nest, and they can attack and they can bite. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're a fire ant. There is something that's known as the red imported fire ant. It's moving northward from the southern states. I'm not aware that it has reached this far north yet.
And is that an invasive species? If it were to be here, would you consider that an invasive species? The what did you call it? The red northern
red,
southern?
The red imported fire
red
ant.
Red imported fire
yes.
ant.
Yes. It could be an invasive species, I think, depending on how you would define invasive species. It's certainly not native to the area. If it starts out competing other native species and is utilizing other resources, then it could be invasive. Yes.
And that's the problem with invasives in general, right? I mean, the regular ants, the New Hampshire ants, have their role in the ecosystem. These outside ants would not have the regular role. They'd be basically disrupting the way things should be. You know, it's interesting that Diane talked about blueberries. I read about something just this morning, Pira, and help me out with the pronunciation. The spotted wing
Drosophila.
Drosophila.
Right.
Thank you very much. An invasive pest of fruit crops. This probably has farmers pretty upset.
It does right now. It's actually a really interesting little fly. It's related to the fruit flies that people use in their genetics labs in high school and college. And it's a little bit different in that those fruit flies or vinegar flies can only utilize rotting material, basically, for their egg-laying purposes. Spotted-winged Drosophila, the females have little saw-edged teeth on their apparatus that they use to lay eggs, so they can use fresh and ripening fruit. And so that's the problem with it. It was blown in probably on winds a couple of years ago, and it does spread. The nice thing about spotted-winged Drosophila is that you can trap for it, it can be detected, and there are a lot of different chemistries that are very effective against spotted-winged Drosophila. And Cooperative Extension has done a fantastic job of getting information out to growers about how to trap and what kind of control options that they have. The key to spotted-winged Drosophila, as is the key with most invasive insects, is early detection. So as soon as you can find that spotted-winged Drosophila in a trap, then it's time to start thinking about applying controls, because it is a drosophilid, and the biggest problem with it is that they have a very rapid life cycle. So if they go unchecked, these populations can build rapidly. But if you hit them early and knock the populations down, then you have an extremely good chance at control.
Okay, and I want to talk to all of you about control in just a moment, because we got a call from somebody yesterday who said he was worried that were the chemicals being used against invasive plants worse than the plants themselves. So I want to talk to all of you about that. But another listener as well is waiting, so let's go to Andrea in Concord. Hi, Andrea, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. This is Andrea Lamoureux. I work at the New Hampshire Lakes Association. I'm the vice president there. And Laura, I'm calling because yesterday you briefly mentioned our Lake Host program, which is the prevention program, Lake Host at boat ramps, meeting and greeting boaters and talking to them about how to prevent the spread of the invasive plants.
Right.
And I'm excited to report that this year we've upped our game, and now our Lake Hosts are talking to boaters about how to prevent these invasive animals as well. Amy had mentioned briefly earlier the clean, drain, and dry approach, and that's what our lake hosts are out there doing this summer. They're at about 100 of the most highly used boat ramps, talking to boaters now about these animals that most boaters don't know about. But once the boaters learn about, they can easily help prevent them by, you know, not only picking off anything they see hitchhiking, but then draining out the water and then letting their stuff dry. We've been really pleased that the boaters have been very receptive. And while this takes them a little bit longer in general, they're pleased to know that we're now looking out the lakes for the animals as well and that they can help. So it's really been a nice nice new development this summer that our boaters really do care about our waters and want to know what they can do.
So the lake hosts are again stationed at the boat ramps at heavily
right.
used lakes. And before
right.
someone
yeah.
goes in, they say, excuse me, sir, madam, can
right.
I check the bottom of your boat?
Right. Yeah. Our lake hosts, we have about 750 lake hosts all around the state at about 100 of the most highly used boat ramps. So far this year, they've inspected 40,000 boats and made actually about 150 saves of the invasive plants.
Wow.
And yeah, so they've been busy. And, you know, most of the boaters they're meeting this summer don't know about these invasive animals. And again, so, you know, it's a huge, huge educational opportunity this summer for them all. So it's
yeah.
been really great.
Well, thanks for calling, Andrea. And Amy, I think I'll throw that one to you. You know, it's interesting. We've heard for many years now about lake hosts and the role they play against milfoil, especially. So this is new.
This is new, and the Department of Environmental Services has worked closely with the New Hampshire Lakes Association to develop materials for the lake hosts to give out to the boaters. New Hampshire Lakes actually just came up with a great new pamphlet that has information on both plants and animals, how to clean your boats, what water bodies are infested with what. So it's a very comprehensive guide that they have on their website at nhlakes.org, and a lot of people are finding that to be a very useful resource. It's sort of a one-stop shop for a lot of information.
Well, and thanks for the call, Andrea. And by the way, we have several helpful links on our website on this issue of invasive creatures. You can go to the exchange page at nhpr.org if you want more information. You can give us a call, too. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. You know, talking about insects earlier with Pira, Jeff, reminded me about something I wanted to ask you about, the spiny water flea. Now, this is a problem.
Yes,
it's not here yet, though, from what I understand.
It's not here. It's migrating through for the spiny water flea. It's about at Lake George in New York.
And not very far away.
Not too far away. And typically that's what we typically see is the pattern spreading out from the Great Lakes area where they were originally introduced from ballast water in this case. You're talking about a very large water flea for its size. Typically, our water fleas are about an eighth of an inch in size. You could just barely see them if you look into a clear lake on a sunny day where you get some reflection. This is a predatory one, so it's a lot larger. It looks like something out of an alien movie, in fact, when you take a look at it under a low-power microscope. And it ranges from about a quarter an inch to as much as maybe five-eighths of an inch in size. And half of that is its so-called tail. It's a long spine that it has. And it also produces kind of a mucus type of material. So when you have people who are angling in the waters doing their fishing, and there are large concentrations of these things, they really muck up the gear, in fact, to the point where you can't even reel in your line.
Oh, wow.
On the ecological standpoint, they're definitely displacing some of the native zooplankton. These are animal plankton, and that's what these are classified as well as impacting some fish species and actually competing with some of the small young of the year fish species for the same resource, for the same food resource. And so they are very problematic because it's not something that would be easy to control once it's introduced.
Right. And from what I've heard, that if a fish, you know, fish like to eat these, but when they eat them, it scars up their insides
because it can get caught in their digestive system and create tremendous problems.
All right. Well, lots more to talk about after a very short break. We're going to check in now with our summer car raffle.
Hearing intelligent discussion like this on The Exchange is one of the reasons you value NHPR. Help us keep The Exchange coming your way by supporting NHPR now during our summer car raffle. Pick up a few tickets online at nhpr.org or call us at 1-888-805-6477. I'm Michael Brindley, a newscast producer and reporter here at the station, and I'm here with Virginia Prescott, host of Word of Mouth.
And you could win a grand prize of a new car. You could walk onto the lot of any of six of Grupponi Automotive Group's dealerships and choose a car that you wish if you win this raffle, and you won't win without a ticket. You can call us at 1-888-805-6477. $50 for one ticket. You can get three tickets for $100. any amount of chances that you want to take and any way that you want to support New Hampshire Public Radio. It is up to you. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Public radio is a two-way street paid for and maintained by the people who travel it. Why not win that car and drive that two-way street? There is never a shortage of news on your ongoing financial support makes it possible for NPR and NHPR to cover the news in the way that you expect and that you depend on. So why not give us a call right now at 1-888-805-6477. Pick up a few of those raffle tickets or you can go online at nhpr.org.
The deadline is Saturday at noon, and as we know, the week speeds up as it approaches the weekend, so why not get your tickets now? You can take as many chances as you'd like. 3 tickets for $100, $50 for 1 ticket, and of course, all of that helps to support New Hampshire Public Radio, the station that you depend upon. You could win a new car. You can choose from a Toyota, Scion, Mazda, Hyundai, Honda, or Ford if you win the prize. A second prize of a Trek bicycle and a Yakima roof rack, and the third prize of a kayak from Portsmouth Kayak Adventures. Those choices will only be yours if you do buy a ticket. You've got to take a chance now. 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
You're probably thinking to yourself, who wins these prizes? Well, how about Catherine McDonough of Nashua? She won the $2,000 worth of Irving Oil gas cards, which was our early bird raffle prize. So why not let that be you? You could be the winner of that car, that bike, that kayak. All you have to do is give us a call at 1-888-805-6477 and take a chance. Again, you have to be 18 years or older. You need to have a New Hampshire, Vermont, or Massachusetts mailing address. You cannot work for NHPR or be related to anyone who does. Go ahead and look on our rules online at nhpr.org. And why not, when you're there, pick up a few tickets as well?
Why not join Sergio from Chester, who said, I love the in-depth coverage of an enormous range of topics. Well, we're certainly hearing that today on The Exchange, hearing about some very interesting creatures as part of their invasive species series. Pat from Manchester says, love the programming. Cheryl from Hooksett says, NHPR is pretty much the background to my day every day. If you depend on New Hampshire Public Radio like those people, like your neighbors who support New Hampshire Public Radio, why not give it a chance right now to get a raffle ticket, $50 for 1 ticket, $100 for 3 tickets. Any amount that you choose to spend, the prize could be yours of a grand prize new car. 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
It's $50 for 1 ticket, or how about 3 tickets for $100? That is a great deal. How about 4 for $150, or maybe even 6 for $200? You do the math. The more you buy, the better your odds are at getting one of those great prizes, that new car. You could use that, you know it. So how about give us a call at 1-888-805-6477. Support the station you love by getting a few raffle tickets. You can go online at nhpr.org and sign up there.
That's right. Any other raffle that you enter, you know, you may win, you may not. But this one, you're supporting New Hampshire Public Radio as well. And you could win a new car or a Trek bicycle or a kayak from Portsmouth Kayak Adventures. The deadline is Saturday at noon. $50 for 1 ticket, 3 tickets for $100. Take your chance. 1-888-805-6477. You can also buy your tickets and look at all the prizes at nhpr.org. Now's your chance. Call us.
This is NHPR with more of The Exchange coming right up. And at 10 o'clock, it's the Diane Rehm Show. Clouding up, slight chance of showers and an isolated thunderstorm this afternoon. High temperatures in the upper 70s. Cloudy, some showers tonight. Some areas of fog forming after midnight. Lows from upper 50s to lower 60s. Mostly cloudy, chance of showers tomorrow morning. It'll be turning partly sunny in the afternoon with a chance of showers. Tomorrow's highs upper 70s to lower 80s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from New Hampshire Orthopedic Center, keeping bodies in motion on the web at nhoc.com. And from Popolo in Bellows Falls, offering dining and entertainment and presenting the Tarbox Ramblers, Richard Scheindel, and the Princess Bride. Information at popolomeanspeople.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, invasive animals in the Granite State, the second of a two-day series on invasive species. Yesterday we looked at plants. Today we're finding out about the mollusks, insects, and other creatures. that are causing trouble here and those other non-native species that may be on the way. Let's hear from you. What have you observed in your community? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, have a couple emails I want to share with you. But before I do, you know, we've mentioned a lot of names so far this hour. The Asian clam, for example, and Pira talked about the possibility of the imported fire ant. To you, I think, Amy Smagula, first, what are some of the names we haven't mentioned yet? Creatures that are already causing trouble or creatures that you're worried about arriving in New Hampshire?
I think that the one that I want to bring up is the Chinese mystery snail, because it is a species that is here, but we're trying to track exactly where it is. The more water bodies that I visit, I tend to see them. And these are very large, almost golf ball size snails that are greenish and brownish in color, and they're very visible on the bottom of a water body. They can get to very large numbers in a water body in just a few years, and they can graze down on the algae pretty quickly and affect the food web because of that. So I think that that would be a really good one for folks to be looking out for and reporting, because I'd like to get a better handle of how widespread they really are. And right now I have them in about probably a couple dozen water bodies, but I think that they're more widespread than that. So if they can just report that into the Department of Environmental Services, I'd really like to get a better handle on where those are.
And a little easier to spot than that Asian clam we talked about, which burrows under the sand and is tiny.
Right. And yeah, they are definitely more visible on the lake bottom, for sure, and river bottom.
Other names, Jeff, that you want to make sure get out there?
Well, I think we're kind of surrounded right now because they're in Connecticut, Maine, Vermont, and north of us in Canada is the rusty crayfish, which is another invasive. That's a pretty aggressive crayfish species that displaces native crayfish, and we could be primed for having that appear also.
Yeah, and most people like crayfish,
yeah,
right? They're kind of cute. They look
like
little lobsters, but this one's a problem.
This one is a big problem.
Yeah. And how about you, Pira?
Well, one that a lot of people have heard about, but I want to make sure that I mention, is Asian longhorn beetle. It's particularly appropriate right now because in states with Asian longhorn beetle populations, and New Hampshire is not one of them, we have never had a positive identification of Asian longhorn beetle in New Hampshire. August is Asian longhorn beetle awareness month. And the reason for that is August is the time when you should see adults flying. So you might see adults active in August. Exit holes from when the adult has crawled out of the tree will be fresh and easier to see on the tree trunks, as well as the holes that the females chew into the trunks to lay their eggs in should be fresh as well. We also have a lot of lookalikes to the Asian longhorn beetle in the state. The longhorn beetle family is quite a large one. We have the white-spotted sawyer, which is active around Memorial Day. We get a lot of phone calls about white-spotted sawyers.
And that one's okay.
That one is completely...
That's a local guy.
It's a native, and it does not attack healthy trees. So it's only infesting dead and dying pine trees. So the problem with Asian longhorn beetle is it attacks healthy trees. So right now is the time when, if we had Asian longhorn beetle, you might be more inclined to see it. So now's a really good time to be on the lookout for it.
Well, and here's a couple emails I want to share with all of you. Jeremy in Stratum says, one of the big issues with firewood in camping, we talked about this earlier, Pira, because that's a way that invasive insects sometimes get into the state. One of the big issues with firewood and camping is the fact that many of the campgrounds hike the cost of buying their firewood to unreasonable prices. Taking advantage of the laws is disgusting. Clearly, the way to encourage these campers to use local firewood is not to do this. Seems like a no-brainer to me. I understand what he's talking about. You bring in your own firewood. It's free because you already have it. At the campground, it's $8-$10.
That
so people say, well, you know.
That is pricey. But I think the thing to keep in mind, and one of my ultimate goals when I talk to people, is to recognize that this is a risky product to move. You know, insects in general, the general rule of thumb is on their own inertia, they're not going to go more than 50 miles. But you throw a load of firewood into the back of a pickup truck and you can drive it 200 miles, 300 miles. We've had firewood that's been brought in from California and Colorado, putting us at risk of a lot of pests that have been introduced to those areas that come in as well. So an ultimate goal would be to recognize that firewood is a risky product and to examine the behavior around moving firewood.
Thanks for that email, Jeremy. Here's another one from Mark in Manchester. We're worried about invasive species coming here, but have we also contributed invasive species elsewhere? Are there New Hampshire / New England / Northeast insects or animals showing up in other parts of the country or the world? Mark, that's a great question, one that I hadn't thought of. Who wants to tackle that? Pira?
I have a really quick answer. I don't know that I can tell you about specific New Hampshire or New England or Northeast insects, but I can tell you that, yes, we have shipped insects and diseases from the U.S. to Europe and Asia. The pinewood nematode is one that comes to mind. However, the number of insects and diseases and plants that we ship to Europe and Asia that establish there is a lot lower than what comes back from Europe and Asia. And it gets back to the idea that because of geologic history and pressures in Europe and Asia, that they have bred more competitive insects and plants and diseases that do better over here than ours do over there.
Wow, interesting. Here's another question that I had for you, Amy, and I wonder if you've gotten this before. Are Canada geese considered an invasive species? Because they are certainly causing some trouble in our waterways where they congregate, and then their waste makes the water, let's just say, unfit for swimming.
It is, yes, it is unfit. The lawns around the lakes are unfit for walking. Yes, they do make quite a mess. They can be a nuisance species, whereas they are probably not an invasive categorized as causing economic harm or biological harm or other types of things.
But they are causing economic and biologic harm at this point. If they're polluting our lakes, then we can't swim or boat.
They are to a certain extent. The interesting thing is this year I haven't noticed that the populations, their broods are not as big as they have been in past years for some reason. Many of the lakes that I've been visiting have not had as many babies out there as I have seen in past years. Usually I see a dozen babies per adult pair, and this year I've only seen three or four, so I'm not sure what the difference is this year, but that is a very common concern on our water bodies, and they do make quite a mess. They are regulated, though, so you can't just go out and shoot them down.
Regulated meaning?
The fish, they are protected under U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regulations and regulations in the state of New Hampshire. So
they're protected. There's so many of them. Why is that?
They're just very prolific organisms. And once they get on a water body where they have perfect conditions, where ideally they like really grassy lawns right down to the lake edge. And
sure.
Unfortunately, we tend to see that a lot on our water bodies. So they have the lake to go swim around in, and then they can crawl up on shore and eat plenty of grass and go through their little digestive process and go back in the lake. So it's just perfect habitat. So we're really trying to encourage people not to have lawns down to the lake edge and to have a vegetated buffer, which is good for so many reasons for lake water protection, that might inhibit the geese a little bit more and not make as favorable a condition for them to come in, move in, and stay.
Okay, so nuisance but not invasive. Jeff?
Yeah, just to add to that, we have a Landscaping at the Water's Edge program and Cooperative Extension, and one of the things that we promote to reduce the impact of geese or to have geese coming on those lawns is to have some very high brushes or shrubs. If you have something about 3 foot in length, if a goose can't see from the water to where it's going or from where it's going on a lawn to the water, it's afraid of being predated upon, and therefore it's very uncomfortable to come up onto the shore. So the fact that we've unfortunately cut down the natural buffers around the lakes, the shrubs, the plants, to get that better view to allow that lawn to go down to the end of the lake shore has actually encouraged these species to kind of inhabit more areas than they typically would.
Wow, so just nice landscaping that, you know, looks
exactly
lovely. Can cause some
unlovely
impacts.
Just so they can't
impacts.
See over, and they won't be comfortable at all. They're afraid of getting poached by a predator.
Well, and who is in charge of, or who is really driving this effort that all of you are working so hard on to combat invasive species? I mean, clearly, PIRA, the state government is involved, but where else are you getting funding, resources? Is it the federal government? Is it the towns? Is it unpaid volunteers?
So there's a lot of money that comes in from the federal government. There are programs through Farm Bill and other programs to do kind of a coordinated federal approach to detecting an early detection of insects, so that if there's an early detection of an insect of concern in one state, then other states can know that it's a threat as well. We also have a lot of volunteers that are keeping their eyes on the trees. We've done a lot of outreach programs with school children in particular to learn the signs and symptoms of these invasive insects and then to report them. And a good place to report them is www.nhbugs.org.
Okay. Amy, real quick.
We do have a lot of federal money coming in to regional groups to help out with initiatives, but for aquatic plants and animals in New Hampshire, it tends to be a lot of local funding through boat registration fees or other fee-funded types of programs. But there are National Aquatic Nuisance Species Task Force initiatives and Northeast Aquatic Nuisance Species Panel initiatives, which regulate activities and try to funnel more money into the region from the federal government. But with sequestration and other things, it's very difficult to get resources.
All right. All three of you, thank you very much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
How many songs has Bruce Springsteen written about cars? Cars are so big in American myth and America's concept of itself, and they're so big right now as a grand prize in the NHPR car raffle. NHPR is NPR News. It's good companionship, and that may be why you listen. We're here when you want us, thanks to listener support. So show your support today by picking up a couple of raffle tickets during our summer car raffle. Call us at 1-888-805-6477. Buy your tickets online at nhpr.org. I'm Virginia Prescott, and I'm here with Michael Brinley.
So why do we do the car raffle? Well, it's an opportunity for us to offer you something a little different. Of course, you love NHPR. You're probably even a card-carrying member because you place a high value on the intelligent programming you can hear, you can find here. And we appreciate your support throughout the year. This car raffle is one of the ways we say thank you to you. We want you to have a new car. You deserve a new car, and this is our chance to give you a new car. But you can't get it if you don't sign up with a raffle ticket or three or maybe four or six. So why not go online right now at nhpr.org or give us a call at 1-888-805-6477.
Gigi from Warner did. She says, I listen all the time. Intelligent, informative, local and world news and entertainment. Julia from Concord said, I listen every day. And you know, we're looking at these list of listener comments. Love, 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 they say. We love to listen to NPR. We love you, says Joshua from Canterbury. Love is what makes this relationship in some way. So we're asking you to help support the programming that you love by calling us at 1-888-805-6477 and purchasing your raffle tickets. $50 for one, $100 for three tickets, and you could win a new car, a truck, bicycle, or a kayak. But you cannot win unless you call us. 1-888-805-6477. Or if you love NHPR, you can pick up your tickets online at nhpr.org.
You can get one ticket for $50, and that's not a bad deal. But how about three for $100? That's an even better deal. The more you buy, the better chances you have at winning one of these great prizes, whether it's a new car, a bike with a roof rack, a kayak, whatever you want to win. Now's your chance to get in on the action. So give us a call at 1-888-805-6477. The money you buy, use to buy a raffle ticket goes directly to that programming that you love on NHPR. So